Welcome to the Painting of the Week podcast, where we look at some of the most significant paintings throughout history. Introducing your hosts, Phil Grabsky and Laura Bentham.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Painting of the Week. And we have a very interesting painting today by Gustav Klimt, who is the subject of a film we have just finished called Klimt and the Kiss, which naturally I thoroughly recommend. This particular painting is called Hermine Gallia, and it was painted in 1903. It's a portrait, full-length portrait, almost full-length, and is at the National Gallery in London, which we're getting to know very well again at the moment, because we are making two films that are related to the National Gallery right now. Anyway, Hermine Gallia, 1903. Laura.
Yes.
First reactions, first impressions of this portrait.
Okay. First things first, Phil. I jumped on the train because I thought, definitely I'm going to go and see this painting. And when I got there, I actually think it's somewhere else at the moment, on loan. I've asked a couple of the guards and they didn't know. So it's not actually there. But the reason I wanted to go and see it was because, as we were doing Klimt, I thought, okay, all the colours is going to be incredible. I can't wait. And then we picked this painting, which on the surface of it, you think, oh, there's not a lot of colour at all. So I was really, really keen to see it in the flesh, to see the colours. But the painting that you have got up on the screen, which is pretty good, it does show that we have got to stand, look, and find, because that isn't just a white dress, is it? It's gorgeous.
We should say, hopefully you're all regular listeners now, though. I also hope that many of you may be listening to the first time, though it is our 59th, so where have you been? But if you go on to the 7th-art.com website and click on podcasts, you can see the painting, or our YouTube channel will show the painting. And it's absolutely one of those paintings that, it's one of those paintings that, honestly, if it's not hung terribly well, if it's not lit terribly well, you might just walk past.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always the danger with a great gallery. There are so many interesting paintings, among them what we would call masterpieces. This is a good example, and to do exactly what you were trying to do, which is make a journey just to look at one painting.
Yeah.
Because if ever there were a painting where, first look, it immediately forms into a woman in a dress, hands clasped and neck to one side. But actually, when you start looking at it and start thinking a bit more about how that dress is constructed, the little bit of red around her waist and what that's doing, her hair, the carpet, the background or lack of background, even his, the way he identifies himself, his signature. So there's a lot to look at. You're absolutely right.
It's funny that he was a colourful character. So I don't actually know, Phil. Is this before his sort of golden period?
It is. Yeah. I mean, he's coming into it.
You can almost tell though, because at the back of that dress at the bottom is already the little tiny sort of geometric patterns that then made up so much of his other work later on.
I mean, I think what you're getting here, which foreshadows The Kiss, for example. I mean, we've just done a whole film which is predicated on trying to understand The Kiss a bit better. Now, one of the things in The Kiss, and you can see it here, is in some ways it's quite a flat plane that you have here. This doesn't go off into the distance. I mean, you can maybe discern where the carpet, the floor hits the wall, maybe. So it's not completely flat. That would perhaps be slightly odd. But there's nothing in the background. There's no window onto a garden. There's, you know. And that's something that maybe he's taken from Japanese art, which kind of goes, sometimes be quite flat. But it's something that he's experimenting with. And if you think of his portraits of this time, again, like The Kiss, this is the beginning of that style. In terms of his depiction of a dress, again, those little points of, you know, by the time you get to The Kiss and there's a couple, then the man and the woman are delineated by the way in which the designs on their cloaks.
Right.
The male's is more rectangular and harsher edges, and the woman's is slightly softer. But here again, it's done with these kind of, particularly the left-hand side as we look at it, it's kind of done with geometric shapes.
But didn't they? It wasn't the ladies sort of in society at the time. They loved him painting the portraits because he made, well, he certainly, I mean, I'm sure the lady was beautiful, but she certainly looks beautiful in that painting and soft, like sort of a soft edge. And a lot of them are.
I mean, he was Austria's number one painter at this point. Oh, and yeah. In demand as a portraitist, there's no question about it. He talks about him having a colourful life. He did have a colourful life,
yeah.
You know, multiple relationships, multiple children. If you see photographs of him, he's always kind of wearing a smock. Although he, you know, lived at home with his mother and sister, but and, I mean, he's,
so the
unfortunately film, somebody who doesn't leave much correspondence, which is a bit of a shame. Because it's always nice to access the correspondence when you're making a film. And somebody who said, you know, my paintings speak for themselves. But, you know, this is clearly a wealthy woman. And she, and, you know, often women would, you know, we sometimes forget that sometimes the women that are being painted by a Klimt, or we're currently making a film about John Singer Sargent, same with him, they're not always just quote-unquote wives and the husband has commissioned a portrait. Sometimes they are businesswomen, they are highly intelligent, they might be artists themselves or authors or...
Okay.
You know.
So they want a painting of themselves.
Yeah.
For themselves.
So they could commission it. And often there's a conversation between the artist and the sitter about what to wear. This isn't clearly as colourful as The Kiss is, and yet, you know, maybe there's a bit of influence. I mean, like all artists, and we've talked about this before, you know, Klimt is very influenced by what other people are doing and looking what other people are doing. So there's a little bit of Whistler here, you know, Whistler who do those symphonies in whites and greys and blues. And even Van Gogh, with Sunflowers, was challenging himself in a way to make a painting that was essentially yellow. It was something that was, to paint somebody in a white gown,
yeah,
is very challenging. And of course, actually, when you look at it, it's an absolute...
Not white at all.
It's not white at all. And then within that, you've got to create body and line and form and motion and... I mean, if you look at the arms and the collar, I mean, there's so much actual detail there. It's very clever.
I can imagine someone actually trying to recreate that dress because that'd actually be a nice thing to do.
Well,
go around the paintings and try and recreate them. I'm sure fashion students have probably done that over the time. But that is such... When you actually start to look at that dress, it is absolutely stunning. And I...
Well, you are somebody that actually makes, you know, works with textiles, aren't you? So,
well,
and I know you. No, but you do.
Well, I'd have a go at that. Why not?
We've got a classic Bentham piece upstairs in our production office. I know your daughter does too. I mean, you could look at that and think, my word, how would I? You know, there's body there, and yet, you know, it's also floating. It's kind of interesting too how the painting. There's a bit of an air above the head. There's nothing under the feet, which is almost, I don't know what that does. Maybe it means, maybe it makes her look like she's floating above the carpet.
Yeah.
The carpet obviously has had some, you know, if it's a realistic depiction of the carpet she's standing on, then one can assume that she's at home in a fairly wealthy home, because that's, one, it's carpeted, which in itself was a, you know, a relatively new idea, and a relatively, well, to carpet a whole room at least, rather than individual.
It's funny that her hair's up, isn't it? I don't know why, because that dress is so flowing and floaty that you would imagine that he would have had, or she may have had, her hair slightly different.
Mm.
I mean, you can really get into this.
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, it says, it is in contrast to the flowingness, that's not a word, but the it is in contrast to the dress, isn't it? The fact the hair is kind of quite tightly pulled behind her. Probably if the hair was down, it would be a distraction. And also maybe putting forward a public face, your hair just was up.
Isn't there a rumour though that he designed this dress? That he did do some designs of, do you know this from?
Don't know that.
So you've just done the film The Kiss on the painting.
As a company we have, yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny, isn't it? Because when you make a documentary like that, are you stuck with the painting, or do you just get then waylaid into his life? It would be so easy to...
It's turned out very well. We used the painting as the entry.
Yeah.
It's one of the most popular paintings in the world. Very common on student dorms and all the rest of it.
Definitely.
But actually, if you were to ask people, well, what do you know about the artist? What do you know about this actual painting? How was this painting done? Why is it so appealing? Who are the people in the painting? What are they doing? You know, it's often used as a greeting card for Valentine's Day.
Oh,
but
yes.
But actually, there's an alternative, you know, interpretation of the painting that is maybe the woman's not quite as... maybe she's been dominated by this guy who's kind of towering above her. And anyway, it's interesting to hear different theories and to understand who Klimt was and how he gets to this point in the early 1900s to paint like that, because it was pretty radical.
I mean, it was unique, really, wasn't it? Him, like, to get to where he was?
With
all the gold leaf and the gold and...
Well, you know, he's influenced by mosaics that were done hundreds and hundreds of years earlier, like Roman mosaics done in Ravenna in like the 5th century. So,
amazing.
1400 years earlier, these beautiful mosaics, they're shimmering in gold.
Yeah. And his father was a goldsmith, so he would have been aware of that as a child.
Mm.
So it all came back to him as such.
So, I mean, the main relationship in his life was a woman called Emily Flerger.
Yeah.
And she was, and we do talk about this in the film, she was, I think, a fantastic fashion designer. And really, you know, she got women out of corsets. And again, you always have to understand the context of how women were supposed to look.
Mm.
And this Emily was somebody, and they were probably lovers at some point, but certainly lifelong friends. But she was a fashion designer, so maybe that influenced Klimt. I'm sure it did influence Klimt in some way.
And maybe together they did that dress then. Because I thought there was a rumour. But her clothes, when you look at that dress...
That doesn't look like the kind of dress that Emily would have done.
No, exactly. I have to say, I did get quite into her clothes.
Emily's.
Oh, they are. It's definitely worth a look. Because they're really, really gorgeous. And there's a couple of really lovely geometric designs.
It's
actually just quite nice to have a look at something different.
I
hadn't even really heard of her at all. So
I think it's amazing. You're looking at photographs from like 1900, 1910. extraordinary.
I know.
I mean, one, the quality of the photographs always amazes me, but two, you know, what they were doing. Of course, in Vienna at this point, I mean, maybe we should give a bit of context. In Vienna at this point, I mean, Vienna has been such a remarkably important city over the last 200 years.
Mm.
And it's this, you know, when I did... In fact, all the four composers that I did in one way or another passed through or lived in Vienna, but certainly Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven. You can't understand them without understanding the importance of Vienna. But then you get to, you know, there was a wonderful exhibition a few years ago called Vienna 1900. In 1900, it's a remarkable year. I mean, there's another exhibition I went to called Barcelona 1900, and another one called Paris 1900. I mean, these are amazing. It's an amazing moment.
Vienna, 1900, yeah.
Vienna has all sorts of things going on, and you know, it's a remarkable city in terms of its architecture. The Habsburgs are kind of slowly in decline. But you have this artistic movement. Now, Klimt is part of what's known as the secession. And they were effectively seceding from traditional art, although Klimt paid a lot of attention to the art that went before him and the artists that were working at the same time as him. Impressionism, for one example. But they also believed in, you know, that art should surround you. So we have that, I mean, locally to us, you know, in Charleston and Rodmel, this idea of everything should be artistic. There'd be door, every chair, every arts and crafts movement.
Yeah, there was an exhibition, I think, at the Tate that had, that he would, they were so, had to have all the chairs, tables, everything. You lived art.
You lived art. And so it's possible here, for example, so this couple are a wealthy... She is the wife of, or one half of a wealthy Jewish couple,
right,
in Vienna,
mm.
And they believed in that. So it's very likely that their house was like that. So you could disseminate from that the carpet, you know, is a specially designed and manufactured carpet.
So nothing in your house.
So everything.
Everything has to be perfect. Yeah.
There's a.
Is it the gallery? Ours,
I think the gallery of New. No, yours. Your house is a bit similar to that, frankly.
We've all got a rough mug somewhere, haven't we? That's not going to fit in. But they wouldn't have that then.
See, this family had, they had to flee the Nazis in 1938, I believe, and unless I'm mistaken, they went to Australia, But there's also I don't think it's this family, is it? But there's an Australian, there's some Viennese who took a room with them, which is like one of these rooms where everything was designed in a certain way. And that actually was put into a container, taken to Australia, and I think it's up in a gallery, maybe even the Gallery of New South Wales.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
And you can see, I mean...
So like those rooms you go to when you're in IKEA? They just transport the whole room.
almost completely the opposite, in a way. I mean, I think it's, you know, sometimes people think of art and they just think, it's like when people say to me, I'm not interested in art, because they're just thinking about paintings.
Yeah.
Actually, art, in an ideal world, if you, you know, everyone has to get to a certain economic level before you can start thinking necessarily about how you design your tables and chairs, but in an ideal world you're living surrounded by art, so that you're putting care into everything. It's one of the reasons I love Japan so much, because there's care taken in every knife and fork and plate and small sliver of garden, and it's a kind of whole thought, rather than I'll put some pictures on the wall and that'll be my That's me and my relationship to art.
I wonder if people are now thinking that they are thinking more that they are artists. Because so many people say, I just can't paint and I can't do this. But you think about all the, I know it sounds ridiculous, but all the shows, cooking and, you know, that people now realise that actually making a cake, making a, it's just a nice dinner, is a creative activity.
Yeah, and absolutely.
So I think people may be realising now that art is everyone can class themselves in some sort of form as an artist.
Yeah, I think so. I think being the way people do their hair or tattoos or certainly the way people dress. But I think what's impressive about this period is, you know, for example, the Successionists had their own museum, and unlike the National Gallery, which is, you know, it's neo-Roman or proto-Roman. It's got these big columns, and it's a big block of a building, and it's
extraordinary.
And it's, you know, it's how Washington, all these different places that basically copy their idea of ancient Rome. Mm. It's about power and statement, and well, Secessionists were much more delicate than that, and their building is really quite different, and has what some call looks like a golden cabbage, but it has this thing on the roof which is beautiful, interweaving kind of golden lines. And again, if you think about in Bilbao, the gallery there, the Disney Concert Hall in LA. I mean, buildings don't have to have straight lines and 90-degree corners.
No.
Sometimes we're a bit limited. Anyway.
Is that building the circle, then? Is the Golden Cabbage? Is it actually...
No, the building itself isn't. It's just, no. That's just...
Oh, okay.
All in the Klimt film.
Yes.
Okay. So this woman has called upon... Now... He was definitely a womanizer, Klimt, although I think he would have been wise not to have, you know, the
yep.
I mean, you know,
children.
But this is a very wealthy family and very influential. And I mean, when we look at her, if you take a closer look at her face, it's quite interesting how he's portrayed her. She's looking straight at you. Head to one side.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes when you look at a Cezanne portrait of his wife, there's kind of, it almost looks like there's nothing behind the face. Clearly, that's not the case here. This is somebody who is, I think, comes across as very forceful.
Yeah. It's funny that she...
Slightly sad, maybe, but...
Maybe, yeah.
Hard to tell.
But her face is the standout part of that painting. The rest of it, when you sort of first stand there, to me, that is the part that stands out. The rest of it then sort of blends, and then you take a while, and it comes out to you. It's beautiful. It really is.
I find the hands interesting, the way that they're interwoven, and they're not kind of covered in jewellery and bracelets. And
she's got no necklace or anything, has she?
Yeah. It's a remarkable gown, but there's very little accoutrement. There's no brooch, there's no necklace, there's no... I mean, I did wonder what that was around her neck. Whether it's attached to the dress or something separate. I suspect it is attached to the dress, isn't it?
It looks like it, because you can't see any other thing that brings it down. So, no.
Do you know anything else about her? I know you've been reading about her biography.
Well, I did a little bit, but only because I think I've got it wrong. I thought she was the daughter of one of Klimt's patrons, so I think I've got that wrong. I need to look more into it, but I got too busy with Klimt. I got way off the painting, which is why I asked you about the kiss, because I got more into his life, who's such a sort of that bohemian character, and I love their outfits when they used to go away for the summer, him and Emily, or Emil, I don't know what her name was, I can't remember.
Emily.
Yeah. And this is to go away. And then he started painting landscapes. And, oh, they're just so lovely. There's one of the sunflower that I just think everyone... I just got way off the painting on the Frayed film. So if I was making a film with you, that's why I was wondering where you would go, because I don't know whether I can stay... focused enough. I tend to get so sidelined.
Now, the Klimt film does kind of explore his whole biography. Mm. I mean, it starts with, you know, we do talk about where he's born and we do refer to how he
dies. I just loved all his colours. I love them so much. And the paintings, because they're slightly geometric as well. I love, and you know, I like making quilts.
Mm.
So for me, when you got onto the kiss and everything, then I'm just seeing quilts all over the place on those paintings.
Mm.
And he certainly seemed like a colourful character. So, like I said, I think he had 14 children. I don't know whether he acknowledged them all. I wonder if they all came back after he died.
Depends how much money he had left over.
Did he have quite a bit of money?
Clint sold for sold immediately to the Belvedere, where it still hangs.
Right.
For a, you know, a good price at the time.
So if you did think you were one of his 14 children,
you might well have. Yeah. I mean, what impresses me is you know, how do you paint a dress which is clearly very full and, you know, has to feel light. You know, you have to feel the body in the dress. You have to feel the dress can move. It can't feel one-dimensional.
No. I mean, that's definitely not linen, is it? That dress is very chiffon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And so, you know, where do you have some transparency? Where do you give it bulk? Where do you have line? Where do you have shade? And we can, you know, it's remarkably cleverly done, actually.
Mm.
And of course, every painting that an artist like Klimt would do would be a calling card to the next wealthy couple or the next possible patron. Yeah. There's no question that, you know, I imagine this painting was hung up in the drawing room, the dining room of this couple, and then they invite people and somebody else say, oh, I want one like that.
Yeah.
I don't think Klimt was ever... He came from a very modest background, but I think he was, you know, he did very well for himself ultimately.
I want to know why. If my husband would want to commission a painting of me for the lounge.
I went into a legal office recently, and next to the desk of the lawyer was a huge painting. I mean, it was... How would I describe it? I mean, about half the size of the top of the desk of a woman's face and staring straight out. And it was really quite intimidating.
Was that his wife?
Well, that's what you would think. Actually, it was his mother. And I thought, that's kind of...
Maybe she popped that up.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I'll pay the rent for your office, but there's a condition. My painting, I'm keeping an eye on you. Yeah, it was a step up from the, you know, the photograph in the frame on the desk.
You didn't ask him about it.
Did. I said, are you a painter? He said, no. I said, is that your wife? He said, no, it's my mother.
Which, and that was it.
I thought, I'm leaving it. I'm sticking them. I'm staying on piste.
Okay.
Anyway, before we drift too far, so, I mean, this painting, it opens the doors to a number of projects that we're currently working on. So,
And hopefully, it'll be back hanging up soon.
Klimt and the Kiss.
Yes.
The National Gallery project. We're looking at a lot of the treasures of the National Gallery London for a film that will come out next year. And we're asking people at the National Gallery, you know, staff, cleaners, curators, directors, shop assistants, security guards, and some, you know, celebrities and some non-gallery staff too, just to identify a painting that has real resonance and meaning to them. And there'll be great stories, but they'll also give us a little bit of insight into a painting on the wall. And then it won't all be the obvious choices. Maybe somebody will choose this. We'll wait to see.
Yeah.
But this should be up at the National Gallery. I'm sure if it's not hanging, it's either because it's on loan or because while they rebuild the Sainsbury Wing entrance, their gallery space is reduced somewhat. And then it also relates to the John Singer Sargent film, where the exhibition, which begins in Boston and then goes to Tate Britain, which we're filming, has a particular focus on his relationship to fashion. Because again, John Singer Sargent, and no question, Sargent and Klimt are aware of each other. But for Sargent, you know, what the sitter wore was hugely important, and there would be a conversation.
Okay.
And, you know, even sometimes Sargent would change the decision made by the sitter. And that exhibition actually has, you talked about reconstructing this dress, that exhibition has some of the original dresses.
Oh, amazing. Well, that sounds good.
I mean, you know, I'm not a painter. I can't imagine how difficult it is to paint. You know, somebody comes in, one, to capture their personality.
Yeah.
But to paint something like this. And it's not like a Raphael or a, you know, where they've gone for verisimilitude. They've gone for, you know, making something feel completely realistic.
No.
This is a different way of interpreting reality, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is a very beautiful, again, a painting that you could just walk by.
Yeah.
And actually a painting which is, I think, very, very beautiful. Very good choice. So, I hope you enjoy that. Please do visit 7th-art.com. Laurie, you are surrounded by it. Is there anything that we've missed? Any wonderful anecdote?
No, because I went completely off. I ended up on Beethoven and listening to Ode to Joy. So there
well,
we are
again. Well, that, well,
and that's where sometimes painting of the week. I don't know whether I'm good for that, but I look at a painting and then just go completely off.
Very good.
So I had a lovely day.
No bad thing listening to Ode to Joy. This kiss for all the world. And on that,
there we are.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Painting of the Week podcast. For more information, please visit our website at 7th-art.com or contact us by emailing info@7th-art.com. See you next time.